Blog Talk Radio.
Monster X Radio. I'm your host, Johnny Bigfoot, and with me tonight is my co-host, Shane.
Hello,
how are
everybody.
You doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing excellent. Doing excellent, John. Thank you.
And originally, we were scheduled to have Lupe Mendoza as our guest, but due to some personal issues, he will not be able to join us this evening. But we do want to wish him the best. And hope he can join us sometime in the future, because I really like that guy. I've never talked to him in person, but you know, he's been a part of the Bigfoot community for a long time, and I know he was real close with Team Taser and has had a couple encounters, and he's just a real stand-up guy. Hopefully everything works out for him, and he can join us in the future, because he did say this was going to be his last blog radio show, didn't he, Shane?
Yeah, he sure did. You know, I don't know if that was like use a moment or sort of thing, but yeah, that's what was relayed on to me. So if it is, it's a shame, but we hope that that's his decision. He will join us here.
Yeah. You know, he's been, I think, a little quieter lately online, but I remember him from way back when, really a vocal guy, nice guy. He's in Texas, right?
Yeah, yeah, he's out of Texas, though. He's been all over the place. He's been up in Washington. I think that's where one of his encounters occurred, I think, with his son. I could be wrong, but yeah.
Yeah, that's right. He's in the Army, so he's been all around, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty good encounter, too. I mean, I'd like to hear the firsthand on that. I know he was interviewed a bunch. Happened in 2011, and I guess he's upgraded his equipment, and he's really increased the hunt since then.
Yeah, and he's really just, you know, like you said, such a great guy, very honest, and just one of the best contributing, you know, researchers out there, bar none. So, like I said, hope to get him on the show sometime. He's fantastic.
Yeah, hopefully he'll still want to do one more. Well, do you want to tell a little bit about today's guest, and we can try and give him a call?
Yeah, yeah. You know, today's guest is obviously Mike Woolley from Keechee. I think that's how you pronounce it, Louisiana. And back in December of 1981, he had a Bigfoot encounter. He's had a few, but the one that a lot of people are aware of was the one he had while he was deer hunting. And Mike is also the inspiration behind the unreleased, yet unreleased movie, Skookum, which I think is set to be released in September. But, yeah, so let's give him a call and get him on the show.
Hello?
Hey, Mike Woolley, this is Shane Corson with Monster X Radio.
Yes, yes.
Hey, you know, thank you so much. I just gave you a little intro to the folks on the show. Thank you so much for joining us, especially under such short notice, but we're really glad to have you here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So do you want to, you know, a lot of people are aware of your encounter. A lot of people are aware of... you know, your relationship with the movie Skookum, but can you maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself, the area you're from, and start out with the big encounter you had. I know you said you've had a few sightings and whatnot, but just give us a little breakdown about yourself.
Well, I'm from Keechee, Louisiana. That's about 20 minutes south of Shreveport, Louisiana. The sighting took place down around Manny, Louisiana, back in December of 1981. It was, you know, a cold day. I lived down there at that time. And I, you know, moved up here about 30 years ago, right after the encounter. But I went deer hunting one Saturday afternoon. And, you know, it was about a 30-degree day, beautiful day for a hunt, blue skies, no wind. It was excellent. And I'd got on my deer stand, and it must have been about 3 o'clock. I was facing north, and this little young doe deer come running up to my stand and laid down beside it. And she was, you know, sweated down, been running. I could tell she'd been running quite a bit. And out of my peripheral vision to the right, I saw something make a big hop to a tree, jump behind a tree. And I looked over that way, and I saw this thing standing there, you know, black, real bright, real shiny. The sun was gleaming on his hair. And he's tall, about 7 foot tall, probably 400 pounds, real muscular built. And I first thought it was somebody in a suit. And because back then it was open range hunting, you know, there was no hunting clubs. The land wasn't posted up. And people would pull tricks on people to try to scare them to, you know, get them to leave the area so the area would be open for them to hunt. Well, you know, I told this thing, you know, to get out of here, you know, take your head off. I'm tired of this. This isn't a decent prank, you know, I want you to leave. Well, he just kept looking at me and looking at me and looking at me. Well, this went on for about 15 minutes, you know, and he just stepped out from behind the tree, you know. And I could tell he was really, really mad. And I could see the steam, you know, coming from his nostrils and mouth, you know, when you're breathing on a cold day, how the moisture comes out. But anyway, I knew something was up because the eyes were so mean. I mean, they were just devilish.
And what color were they?
Black. The creature was about 20 to 30 yards from me, and the face was light brown, real human-like. I mean, our jaw structure had high cheeks, high forehead, hair coming back down behind his neck, touching his shoulders. I didn't know what it was. Well, when I put my rifle up and looked through the scope, I could really see the face real, real clear. I mean, it's just like it was right in my face, touching my nose to nose. The eyelashes, eyebrows, the teeth, the eyes, it was just, I couldn't shoot it. This is some kind of wild human. I don't know what it is. I didn't know what it was.
Well, were you scared at this point?
Oh, was I scared? I was shaking. I mean, my knees were knocking, and my teeth were rattling, and I was clammy. I broke out in a sweat, and I've never been that afraid in my life. I thought I was going to die because his eyes were so evil. You know, he could tell that he wanted me dead. He wanted me out of there. And when I pointed that gun at him, that was the last resort. He let me know that, and no matter a sense, that he was afraid of me, that he wanted to do business. You know, all I had to do was make the first move. So he growled at me really, really loud. It was a roar like a lion. And he kept showing me his teeth. And matter of fact, he clicked his teeth together. And I heard a whistle about that time, about 100 yards from there, over to the southeast. And he looked over that way, and he whistled back. And I swear, during my deer hunting experiences, I've heard this whistle 100 times, but I thought it was a bird, you know. And he looked back at me. And I heard some rustling coming, you know, walking this way. You could tell it was bipedal walking, this coming towards him. And I thought that it was an ambush. And I just jumped off my stand. It was about a 10-foot stand. And like I said, there was no wind that day blowing. And he just run up on me. You know, he didn't smell me. He didn't wind me. And he just run up there on top of me. And I guess he was afraid to move, you know, afraid I'd fire on him.
Hey, Mike, what time of day was this again?
About 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
And, you know, I took off running to my truck, which was a half a mile away. And as I was running, he was to the left of me. He was south of me. The road I was running down was to the west. And he was over to my left side. And he was staying up with me, but he was running through brush and limbs, and he was bulldozing it. I mean, trees, smaller trees, hedges, limbs. He was just mowing it down, and I knew right then he was mad. And I was thinking, well, what am I going to do when I get to my truck, when I take the keys out of my pocket, to take the time to take the keys out of my pocket and unlock the truck, he's going to pounce on me. He's got me. Well, when I got to the tailgate of the pickup, I spun around to the left, threw my rifle up at him, and fired a warning shot. And the bullet went about 7 foot in a pine tree right in front of his face. And it actually blew bark on him. I saw that. And if it had been two more seconds, the bullet would have hit him in the head. Okay? I got in the truck, and I was driving off. I looked in the rearview mirror. Lo and behold, the other one that he had signaled was chasing me behind my back. I didn't even know he was chasing me. I had two of them on my tail, you know. And I saw him when he come up, and he met up with the other one, and they just stood there and looked at me as I drove off.
Wow.
And, you know, like I said, I lived in the woods. I'd start at 4 in the morning. I'd get through hunting at 8 every day, just all day long. I stayed all day. I didn't leave the woods. And I had other encounters, too.
So were you out hunting bucks then?
I was hunting deer. Yeah, I was. That's all I hunted was deer. What I would do before deer season started in November, and we would have a squirrel season start, you know, in October, and dove season in September. Well, I would go then, but mainly I was looking for tracks for deer. You know, I got in the woods early, but I was always in the woods all year long because I was checking deer sign, I was putting out corn, I was checking, you know, see how the deer were moving and where the deer were moving. So it wasn't no two-month deer hunting deal for me. I mean, I was in the woods 12 months out of the year.
So this deer that ran up to your stand, that was a small doe?
Very small doe. I would estimate her weight about 50 pounds.
And it just died right there, or?
No, it run off. During the altercation with the creature, the deer left. I didn't see it leave.
It was so scared from being chased that it didn't even really pay much attention to you.
No. You know, deer don't run. Deer don't come to your deer stand. They run away from you. And when I first saw that deer come to me, I thought, well, I'm gonna kill me a big buck because she's being chased by a big buck because the rut was on.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, when the deer are in heat, you know, and the big bucks are chasing them. And I thought she was being chased by a big buck. And I thought, you know, I'm fixing to get him.
So you weren't planning on shooting that one?
No, I wouldn't. It wasn't doe day anyway. It was only bucks only.
Okay. That's what I was wondering. Okay.
Yeah, so Mike, sounds like you may have broken up a Sasquatch hunting party, so to speak.
That's what I feel like I did, and I think, number one, they were mad about me costing them their meal, and number two, I think he was mad about because I discovered him, because I was a little bit slicker than him. You know, I was in a tree, and he ran up on top of me without seeing me before it was too late.
Yeah, I've heard of a lot of encounters, especially with an aggressive Sasquatch, where hunters have been out hunting, and they see these deer run right in front of them, just out of nowhere, and they spot Sasquatch or a group of Sasquatches, and they're acting hostile. You know, there's a great report out of Washington, really kind of similar to your story, but, yeah, it sounds like you broke that up.
Do you think these things are fast enough to catch a deer, or do you think they'd have to use some sort of trickery or trapping?
Yes. Like I said, I was 25 years old at that time, and I weighed about 150 pounds. And, you know, I was pretty fast on my feet. And I was running fast as I could run. And he was running through the brush. You know, you got to realize that it's hard for even a human being to run through brush. It's really, really tight and a bunch of trees. And he was running. He was mowing it down, staying up with me. You know, I had open road, clean road to run on, but he had to run through the brush and the trees and the underbrush and all the briars, and he was just mowing it down.
Do you think they were bluff charging you, or do you think if they had caught up to you or caught you, that arm would have come to you?
I felt like my life was in danger.
Yeah.
I mean,
even
he was
with
really,
the gun,
really
huh?
mad. What would you say?
Even with the gun, huh?
Yes. Well, you know, he he let me know that he was not afraid of me in no sense of way, you know. It was like make your move, you know. You're not intimidating me. Well, I was very much intimidated myself.
Yeah, lucky you did have a gun, or...
Well, I feel like what I used to do, I'd go out during the year, you know, in the springtime and in the summertime, and I would just sit on my deer stand. I would just go out there and sit and watch the deer. And a lot of times I didn't take a gun. And I got to thinking, what if that would have happened then? No protection, you know. What would I have done? Would I have been alive to talk about it today? You know, he was very, very, he showed me his teeth three or four times. He clicked them at me, you know, click, 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 you know. This went on for 15 minutes before I actually jumped down off the stand and run off.
Did you smell anything at the time?
Yeah,
I mean,
negative. No, I didn't. Everybody has told me and mentioned smellings to me. One time I went to my deer stand one day, and there was an evil with some bad smelling scent. I thought somebody had killed a deer or field dressed a deer near my deer stand, you know, and I kind of got mad. I said, you know, it's bad enough somebody hunting off my deer stand without asking, but they kill a deer under it and then field dress it, number two. That just ruins the stand. Well, I stayed there about 4 hours, and I left. And the next day I went back to the same, very same stand, got on it, and there was no smell. The smell was gone.
Flycatch in our chat room asked a question. He wanted to know what you saw through your rifle scope.
Well, mainly what I was looking at was the face. That right there alone, when I had a 9-power rifle scope, and I turned it down. It was a 3x9. I turned it down to 3-power because he was up close. And when I saw the face, the jaw structure, the teeth, the big flat teeth, his eyes and face and all, I just couldn't pull the trigger. Granted, I had the crosshairs between his eyes, but I was so intimidated. He made me feel like that high-powered rifle was a BB gun. I was actually afraid to shoot him because I thought I'd make him mad.
Was he in a position where he could have maybe ducked behind a tree or any cover?
Well, he was standing behind a tree, but the tree really wasn't, you know, he had his face up against it peeking around, but I could see both shoulders and the sides of him very clear. He kept what made me run, you know, get down off the stand, is he was getting kind of jumpy, kind of edgy, you know, kind of, you know, people say when people's getting ready to fight, he's getting froggy, you know. And
yeah.
That's what he was doing. And that's what made me think I better get out of there.
And, like, you kind of, you call it a he, so what makes you think it was a male Sasquatch?
Well, the muscle structure of the creature. The creature's chest, his upper body, he had big pectoral muscles. He had a real flat stomach, actually muscle-like. And all the females that I've seen have been kind of short and dumpy. This one was tall, built. He was really built up. Strong body, big muscles.
So you didn't see, like, anything, you know, anything like the Patty film where you see some breasts or anything like that? You just saw just a real muscular-looking broad body.
Right, real muscular-looking broad body. And like I said, he was standing behind a tree, and I really couldn't see nothing else, you know, to I'm just assuming it was a male because of the tall, straight body. There was no fat on him. I mean, he was all muscle, and that's why I call him a he. You know,
yeah.
I don't.
And he had long hair, huh?
Yeah.
See, that's how I picture a Sasquatch to be. You know, that's one thing that Patty doesn't have. You know, Patty has more of that even, shorter hair.
Well, I know.
So yours didn't really look like Patty.
I thought you meant long hair on the body. No, you know, he didn't. He had long hair on his head to his neck.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, the rest of it was more or less like Patty's. But, no, he had long hair on his head. Face-wise, very little hair on his face. He was light brown, like he'd been, like he'd had a tan. You know how tan is on a person?
Yeah.
Really wasn't no black face. It was just a light tan face. You know how Patty's is real white?
Mm-hmm.
This one was kind of a light brown.
And that goes along with the hair as well?
Right. The hair The hair was black.
So did it really blend in with its environment?
Well,
in your
opinion? Yes. Where it come from to the east was nothing but briars and brush. And I felt like, you know, the only creature that could get through that would be a deer. You know, there's no way. And that's what hit my mind, what really kind of set things off, you know. My mind was just asking me all kind of questions when this thing come up. You know, is there a circus in town? No. Has a gorilla escaped? No. You know, on and on. And I knew right quick, hey, he come through this very rough part of the woods that I couldn't walk through it. I tried. It was just too bad. But he come through there. And he was in some real, I was hunting some woods that, you know, a lot of people wouldn't hunt because they said that it was loaded with big rattlesnakes and they were afraid to hunt it. Well, that's the kind of woods that I wanted to hunt. I wanted to hunt where there wasn't no people there, you know, and because the hunting was better. I was just more careful, you know. I watched for the snakes, you know. I had snake leggings on. Snake bite kid.
Thanks.
And, you know, I did see some rattlesnakes in there. But that's where I always kill my deer.
Yeah. And
lucky
you actually get
usually hear them.
Did you actually get a view of the second creature? I mean, did they look similar?
Well, the second creature I saw looked similar. But you got to realize that I was on the deer stand about 7 miles to the southwest of this location. I was sitting on my deer stand one day, and I always built my stands. I'd use nails or railroad spikes, and I'd find me 3 or 4 trees together, and I'd put my spikes inside the tree, and then I'd go up, and where the trees come to a fork, I'd put me some boards, put me a little roof over it, and then I'd get a bunch of that Spanish moss, and I'd cover myself up. Nobody could see me. I've had hunters come walking under there with dogs, and they couldn't see me in a tree. You know, I always said if you can see a deer stand with a hunter on it, a deer can see it too. So,
absolutely.
But anyway, I was sitting there one day and looking to the northwest, and there was this big cedar tree. I don't know how big it was. It was awesome. And all of a sudden, it just opened up, and the creature stepped out of it. He had been hiding in that cedar tree. So, I mean, I freaked out, and I was really afraid because I had to walk by there to get to my truck. Well, about a week later, I was there, and I was leaving about 12 o'clock one day. Hunting wasn't no good, so I just decided I'd leave, might call it a day. And I walked over to the tree, and I took my rifle, and I stuck my rifle in a tree, and I pulled back some limbs in there, and I could see where he had broke some limbs where he could make it comfortable. What he had been doing, turkeys love to roost in cedar trees. I don't know why, but they feel comfortable. They roost in those trees. He had been getting in that tree, hiding, and catching turkeys, and I looked down on the ground, and there was 2 big butt prints. And there was, on the right side, was a big humongous pile of feathers, neatly, meticulously stacked. On the left side was a pile of bones, and meticulously stacked also. And he had been getting in there grabbing those turkeys. All he had to do was just reach up there and grab him one, you know, because they were lit up at the top of the tree. And he really had him a system, you know.
So this was an area with a lot of cedar trees.
Yes.
One of the questions typical. Is, you said the cedar tree just opened up. Do you mind clarifying that? What exactly did you mean opened up?
When the creature come out of the tree, the limbs kind of pulled themselves apart, or when he come out. It's you know, it's like, you know, getting in a bush or something, and then when you get ready to come out, you've got to throw your arms apart to come out of it, to get out of it, and that's what he did.
Okay.
So it was a cold day, which is rare, huh, for Louisiana.
Well, we do have some times where we get down to 25.
Yeah.
Also, we had some 18 degree days last year, and I always said the colder the better for hunting. You know, the animals.
Slow those
moving,
creatures,
you know,
down. That blood a little slower in those animals, maybe.
Well, I don't know. I think my feelings on that is I feel like hot weather, the creatures are laid up. You know, people say they're nocturnal, but I've seen them, all the creatures I ever saw was during the daytime. And I think when they're hungry, they're going to go after food, whether it's nighttime or daytime. It don't matter. You know, they got a need to get out. They're going to get out, and they're going to take care, you know, of their families, you know.
Yeah, and I don't think they can really afford to be nocturnal year-round, especially during hunting season. You know, the worst thing they could be doing is sleeping on the forest floor when everyone's out hunting.
Right, right. I mean, they'd be wide open, you know, if they did that.
Yeah.
And you said that in the original encounter that while on your tree stand that this thing bared its teeth, mm-hmm. obviously a sign of aggression. Can you describe the teeth a little bit?
The teeth were flat. They were big. They were flat.
Okay.
I didn't see any. Those teeth, it's really sharp.
Mm-hmm.
You
see any sharp molars or anything like that?
Yeah, I didn't see none of that. Cool. I looked through my scope, and when I pointed the gun, is when he really, really got mad. I mean, he was mad at me, but when I pointed that rifle, I mean, the show was over with. I mean, it was time to do business.
He's like, how dare you?
No, he was mad. He got PO'd. Boy, that rifle, man, I mean, I guess, you know, I kind of let him know, hey, you know, I guess he thought I was going to pull the trigger. But he really got mad. But like I said, it was too human. I just couldn't pull the trigger.
Another fascinating thing you mentioned, too, was the whistling. And I've heard whistling before, along with some other stuff. The whistling, can you describe the whistling? And in your opinion, it was probably, I'm guessing, a form of communication with the other Squatch.
Yes, yes. I've heard the whistling before in the woods, but I thought it was a bird, you know. And like I said, when he growled, his partner whistled back, and then he turned and whistled back at him. And there it was, the whistle that I'd heard for years and years and years, the same whistle that I wrote it off as a bird.
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
So it sounds like it was some sort of communication with the other Sasquatch. Was it a high-pitched whistle?
It was a very, very, very high-pitched shrill whistle.
Yeah. And that's kind of similar to what I've heard. You know, beforehand I'd pass them off as birds, and I know my birds pretty well, but it's almost unmistakable kind of whistle.
Mm-hmm.
So that I find that really
compared to an owl.
Yeah,
some of the owls got some pretty wild whistles and screams.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, owls, I mean, I've heard plenty of owls, but, you know, not usually during the day. Not that they don't, and they almost sound like a scream.
Yeah, that's
right.
More in the middle of the night. That's woken me up camping before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, Mike, did you happen to see, like, the eyebrows on this thing, or, like the head region of it?
I saw the whole face very clearly.
Yeah. What were the eyebrows like?
They were protruding.
Protruding, yeah.
Not real, more or less little larger than a human's. That's what, and the forehead was a high Ford, and very similar tires, very similar. This thing didn't look like no chimpanzee, no monkey, none of that. We've got a place we're working now that has several creatures on it, and they're coming up behind this lady's house, and we've sat on the back porch, and they have come up. And in the tree line, about 75 to 100 yards behind her house, and they have faces like monkeys, and also they have three toes. I don't know what the difference is between these two creatures. The one I had the altercation with was a whole lot different creature. He had five toes. I went back, looked at the tracks after the altercation a couple of days later. He had five toes. But these other creatures that we're working now, they have three toes and they have monkey faces.
So a completely
different.
Kind
of like the Falk monster, right, or the Legend of Boggy Creek? Didn't that have three toes?
Yeah, real nasty looking, nasty looking, matted hair. I've got pictures of them. And
you know, back to the whistle. I wasn't necessarily referring to a misidentification as much as maybe they mimic to an extent, you know, other animals or birds to kind of throw humans off or so that you do think it's a normal sound in the woods.
Right.
But yet it's different enough where they know it's not another bird or animal.
Right. Well, I don't know if it was a I'm in trouble whistle or if it was a panic whistle or, but when he heard his buddy growl, you know, he whistled at him.
Now, do you think that they're human?
I don't know. That's a good question. I wish I did, though. I think when I die, the first thing I'm going to ask God is, can you tell me about the Sasquatches?
Yeah.
You know, what are they? I don't know. Like I said, I thought it was some kind of, you know, I've been doing some reading, some books. And I read about feral humans and stuff, and that's what I thought it was. And, you know, after I got back home and kind of sat down and let my nerves kind of settle down, you know, I started thinking about it. And, you know, I didn't know if I was losing my mind. I didn't know if it was some kind of bad omen sent down to me, you know, for years and years and years. I didn't mention this to nobody because I didn't want to get branded that I was crazy or losing my mind, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a guy, elder gentleman, that lived 2 miles from there, and he sent a deal in to the BFRO about one night he was out letting his dog use the bathroom, and there was a creature standing beside a utility shed. The shed was 8 foot tall, and the creature's head was above the shed. And that was 2 miles from where I had my altercation. And I showed my wife then. I spoke up and I said, you know, I got something I need to tell you. And I told her, and she looked real weird at me. And then I showed her the link. I said, read this. And I said, that's where it happened, you know. And I felt really, really vindicated, you know, because I had a lot of emotions I had held up my body.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't know what it was.
On that original encounter, when you saw the Sasquatch and it bared its teeth, did at any time did the deer touch your deer stand?
The deer were so close to me that if I would have stepped down off the deer stand, I'd have stepped on the deer.
Oh, it was that close.
That close. It was like the deer come to me for protection.
Nice. That's good.
Now you said that you've had other sightings or encounters. Do you want to kind of go into some of those besides the, I know you've talked about two now, but I think, you had mentioned to me earlier during a phone call that you had a neighbor saying that he had something big on his property.
Right. I had a neighbor that lived, well, I wouldn't call him a neighbor. He was just a friend. And, he lived a good hour from me. And he told me one day that he was riding his four-wheeler, and it was really, he was in a rural area, and it was really, really some heavy woods. And had done some logging back there, and they'd created some roads. And he was riding on those roads, and he just rode up on, he said, a great big hairy Sasquatch. And he said, man, I was on top of him. And said, he looked at me, and he said, I was staring at him. I said, well, did you get a picture? He said, no, because I was afraid that if I'd have went in my pocket, he might have thought that I was pulling out a weapon, and he might would have jumped me, but all I did was take off. I went over there, and I was kind of doing a little investigation. I was walking around, and I was behind his house. I was on Old Logging Road. And I was looked over to the right, and there was a little creature, a little juvenile, and he was standing there behind a tree, and he was squatted down, and he had his hands kind of balanced himself. He was up against the tree, and I snapped a picture of him, which I have now, and I saw tons of tracks back there in the sand. I mean, it was like a freeway of where they were running up and down those logging roads. They were watching the houses. There was a couple of houses there. And you could see where they were standing behind trees. You could see they would not walk down the center of those logging roads. They would walk on the edges of the logging road.
Mm-hmm.
And they were watching those houses.
Yeah, I've been on many, I've done a lot of research, but I've found the same thing, that they rarely walk on the logging roads, but they just, and actually you'll find that with most, a lot of animals, that they don't actually use the logging roads. They'll step on the side and follow the logging road, but they will not step on the logging road.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is what these did.
Mm-hmm.
They did not.
So what? Whatever happened with the picture?
It's still in my phone.
Oh. Are
I
you
can send it to you.
Nice. Yeah, that'd be great to see.
Yeah, you should share it on our Monster X if you feel obliged to do so.
I'd be more than happy to do that.
That'd be awesome. Really appreciate that. I don't know if you're on there yet. I don't believe so, but that's something we can arrange. You're also, now, the movie Skookum was somewhat based on, or at least you're the kind of inspiration behind that movie, am I correct?
Right, it was mainly my inspiration. This lady, Debbie King McMartin, she contacted me and told me, she said, I want to do a movie, but I want to keep it realistic, and I want somebody true. And she sat down with me, and we talked for hours and hours and hours. And I had a bunch of videos, and I had a bunch of books. And she read them. She said, I want to learn everything. And so she did. And we started working on this movie about 4 years ago. And I got to admit, it was trying. It was a trying time. There's a lot of things that goes into a movie, raising the money for the movie. That's really a big deal, trying to get all that money, and there, you have to amass a lot of people. But anyway, I told her my story, and we finished the movie in April. We had some real nice people, some big stars come down. Dr. Jeff Meldrum, I called Jeff, me and him as good friends, and I asked him, I said, would you be in the movie, Jeff? And he said, yeah, I'll be glad to, and he did a great job, by the way. The movie will be finished around October 1st. There's going to be a screening in Ennis, Texas on October 27th. I think my producer told me today if anybody's interested in the DVD of the movie, it will be out around a week or two after October. You can go to skookumthemovie.com and get one. But, I really, really enjoyed Dr. Meldrum. He's a super guy.
Oh, he's a super guy, and you're pretty much the one that got him involved in that,
Yes, I did.
And he was, he was pretty open to do it, huh?
Yeah, he was grateful. A matter of fact, there's going to be another movie, probably another year or two, and he's done signed on for that.
Oh, Oh, wow. Yeah, no, I've met Dr. Meldrum in person, and I've actually done some I met him a few times, but I've actually gone out and into the field with him up with Derek Randall's in the Olympic Project, and yeah, he's just an amazing guy. You know, just like your average person, except he super intelligent and knows his stuff.
Very intelligent, man. And you know, I had brought some bones to use in a movie. A guy had given me. We needed some bones, you know. And my wife drove up in the car, and they went in the car, and we had some cow bones, you know, and some cow skulls and some other parts, but different bodies, you know. I didn't know what they were, and he got the name of them. Hey, that's a dog head, you know, and that's a cat, search vertebrae, you know, just bang, 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 you know. And, you know, I also like to mention that I have met some of the finest people in the Bigfoot world, and I've made some tremendous friends. And, you know, my hat's off to everybody. I mean, you know, they've been super nice to me, and I've made some very good friends. And there's, man, I'll tell you, I wouldn't take nothing for them.
Have you ever met, Stacy Brown? Has he ever been in contact with you? Because you're right around the corner from him, no?
No, never have. Never have met with him. I've met Gimlin, Mr. Gimlin.
Oh, Bob Gimlin, yep. So, yeah.
They had a Texas Bigfoot research organization over in Tyler, Texas, 2010, had a seminar, and he was there. And he is a super nice gentleman.
He really is. You know, I've had a chance to sit down and have lunch with him and talk to him during the Falcon Project seminar they had up here in Oregon, and he's just as genuine and nice a guy as they come, you know. I have a lot of respect for that guy.
I know Autumn Williams.
Oh, yeah. I know Autumn as well.
She's been very quiet here. I don't know. I talked to her mother about 2 weeks ago. I called her mother and asked her, Sally, if she had any more of those books that she had written, because we have some friends in Norway that loves Bigfoot. And I was going to send them a book. So she sent me the book right on. And I got the book ready to ship to Norway. And, you know, I'm talking with some people over there about Sasquatch, you know, over in that area.
Yeah, I think I could be wrong, but I think Autumn might have some health issues, but I could be wrong. So
She does. She had some health issues, and I think it's kind of, you know, she's kind of laid back right now.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've followed her for a long time. I know her, so, yeah. Hey, Johnny, I think we have a couple of callers. Do you want to take one?
Yeah.
318, you're on the air. Hello? Okay, we'll go with the next one. 413, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Hi there.
Welcome to Monster X.
Thank you. This is Girly Bigfooter.
Hey.
Hey, Girly.
Hi. I don't really have a question. I was just listening in, actually.
Okay.
Well, I've seen you around on Facebook and a few other places, and I know that you get out in the field quite often, so that's awesome.
Yes,
thank
I
you
do.
For listening.
Yes, I do. I'm looking forward to the movie coming out, though, I do have to say.
Thank
Looks
you.
Like it's going to be good.
I think it's going to be good, and like I said, we had some real nice people. You know, my producer let me, told her I had to have some creative control, and she let me hire some Bigfoot people, you know.
Nice.
I said, if you're going to have a Bigfoot movie, you got to have some Bigfoot people.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, that would be
and
good.
We're going to keep this thing as realistic and believable. And like I said, I worked with Dr. Meldrum, and that is a fine gentleman.
Now, is this going to be a sequel, the
yes,
the
ma'am.
Second
there's
movie?
Going to, mm-hmm. There's going to be a sequel to this movie. It'll probably come out probably next April. Dr. Meldrum will be back, and they left it to the writers. I helped write the movie. I helped get the movie started. It was my idea, and about what they come up with, and she went with it and tweaked it a good bit, you know,
mm-hmm.
and we finished it off. We finished the movie, I think, around the end of April, and it should be finished, you know, ready for the screens in October.
Now, are you already doing the sequel? Is it in production
now?
No,
ma'am. No, ma'am.
No.
The sequel is about 25% written.
Mm.
So it's going to be a while before that comes out.
Yeah. Well, it sounds interesting.
It is. I love doing it. You know, I hope everybody enjoys it. I think they will, because we tried to keep it, you know, real. And, you know, we did not disrespect. The creature was not disrespected in any way in the movie.
Yep.
With the movie Skookum, how is the creature portrayed? Is it like a slasher film?
No, sir.
Okay.
I made a point that when we started this movie, and my producer also pledged to me no slashers. It's also commented that I want a movie that children can watch, because kids love Bigfoot. Bigfoot is a big deal with a kid now.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted it to be their hero. And so there's no slasher movie.
And how are the researchers? How are the researchers portrayed?
Well, the researchers in the movie went to rescue this girl that was lost in the swamps. Jeff, he played, I can't pronounce what he is, but...
Anthropologist.
I get hung up on that.
Yeah.
But anyway, he played that part. He come down to help an ex-girlfriend to find her sister that was lost in the swamp. And it goes on like that, you know. And we had Paul Logan. He played Gator. Paul played in Days of Our Lives. He was also in Terminator, Mega Piranhas. Really good actor. I enjoyed him. He was a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were more of a consultant on the film? You were actually not in the film, right?
Yes, sir. I was in the film. I played a part.
Oh, excellent.
I played a part. I played myself. Matter of fact, I played myself, Mike Woolley. I did not use a stage name. I used my real name.
Nice.
Your choice?
Yes. Yeah, well, she liked my name. She said it goes with the deal, you know. I said, well, it don't bother me. I'll do it. And I was, you know, I was fine with it. But
how did this all come to pass? I mean, so were you contacted for this?
Well, there's a lady in Shreveport, Louisiana. You know, Shreveport, Louisiana is we do a lot of movies now. They come in there because of the tax credits. They get a lot of tax credits, and it's cheaper. This lady, Arlena Acree, who's over the movie production in Shreveport, was out one day riding around with some movie producers that wanted to make a horror movie. Well, I happen to be in a store, a little bitty store. I live in a little bitty town. If you go through and blink your eyes twice, you're done through. Anyway, she stopped in that store and was asking about, you know, different. We have a bunch of old houses here, and they're real spooky looking. They're, you know, I live in, it's like,
yeah,
in 1800s. You know, it's a real spooky town where I live. And she wanted to shoot. They wanted to shoot a movie here, and they didn't. They needed guidance. They didn't know where to go. And I got to telling her, you know, go here and there. And she said, would you show us around? I said, yeah. So I took them, and I showed them around some areas, some old spooky houses and some old college. It's real spooky that, you know, it was used in the Civil War as a morgue. And we got to talking about monsters and stuff. And I said, well, you know, I like Bigfoot. You know, that's my deal. And she said, you know what? I got a friend up in Shreveport that would love to make a Bigfoot movie. Would you be interested? Would you mind talking to her about it? And I said, yeah, I'll talk to her. So I give her all my contact, you know, and Debbie called me, and we got to talking about it, and she started writing it. The first script didn't go over too well. I mean, it didn't float.
Mm-hmm.
And then I come up with an idea about, you know, having a girl lost in the swamp. And so that happened to work. It seemed like everybody liked it. You know, Jeff Meldrum was a writer also. Jeff did a lot of writing in this movie.
Oh, really? Wow.
He was a consultant. And I'll be honest with you, Jeff fired back a lot of stuff that he didn't like. He said, hey, man, this ain't going to float. I don't like this. And so we changed it, you know. And Jeff did a lot of consulting in this movie.
Yeah, it's something he's going to be a part of, I'm sure. With his reputation, he doesn't want to be in a slasher film, that's for sure.
Right. Matter of fact, he wanted to come back. He said, y'all need me again? Do I need to come back down there and do some more? You know, he was really a great guy.
It's great that you have real researchers, you know, in the film that you're making or have made, and the one you're going to make.
Well, that's the only way I would do the movie. First off, no slashers, and I want real Bigfoot people in there, because if you're going to put something out there for a general audience to watch, man, you've got to have something to keep their interest going, you know.
True to life.
You're not going to have no Kid Rock out there, you know,
right?
In a swamp, in the woods, walking around, you know. I know he
wears
a hat.
Well, I haven't seen him yet, so, I can verify that.
Right.
Hey, Mike, did you take him to your actual location?
We didn't get to, we worked about 22 or 3 days, and when we were working, we started in the morning early, and we sometimes work 24 hours through.
Yeah.
And most of the days we worked 16, 18 hours. So we really didn't have much time to do any hobnobbing. But the next time he comes, I'm going to take him to the area where we've got all those Bigfoots coming up to the lady's house and, you know, show him that. You know, I'm going to make sure we have time. You know, he flew in on a Wednesday. We picked him up. And he left on a Sunday, so we ruled his part. You know, he did his part, and he left.
Mm. That's awesome.
So
it's really a big deal, that movie. I mean, it's been, you know, advertised all around Facebook for quite a while now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope everybody enjoys it, you know. I did it, you know, it came out of my heart. And, you know, I kept the Bigfoot in interest, you know, and like I said, there was no disrespect to Bigfoot. You know, I made sure of that. And
that's
no slashers.
That's the best part. Yeah, that's the best part.
So,
and
Mike,
Rob Godet's involved too, right?
Yeah, Rob. Rob Godet. He was a producer. He was involved. You know, I know Rob. I worked with him a good bit, and he also. He's a researcher himself.
Yeah, he
him
has
and
a...
Melissa Adair. I think they're on Squatch Unlimited or something.
Squatch Unlimited,
yeah.
And both great folk. I love them to death.
Mm-hmm. Right, they got their own radio show, I think.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
They usually do a hangout on Tuesday evenings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah.
So, Mike, what avenues has this film given you? I mean, are you you out in the field actively researching, or are you just kind of on the sidelines?
Well, they come to me. I'm kind of recluse, living out by myself, kind of ex-Vietnam vet, and got a long beard, hair. You know, if you watch the movie trailer, the guy that's standing there in the door open and the guy playing chess, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
And they
sounds
come
like Doug
to
Dynasty.
Me. Right, yeah. they come to me. Hey, those guys don't live but 2 hours from me.
I figured.
And they come to me, and she's asking me, did I know about her parents, you know, her sister, if her sister was alive, or I had a relationship with Bigfoot in the movie. Me and him were like buddies, and we communicated together. You know, we had a bond, and they knew that. The sheriff told them that, you know, hey, this guy's kind of off his rocker. You know, he's an ex-vet, and he's a recluse, you know, and nobody goes around him, you know. But he knows the swamp. You know, he knows Bigfoot. And, you know, she comes and asks me if Bigfoot killed her folks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, it, you know, then it goes to the next scene.
Mm. Sounds really good.
Yeah, I think everybody's going to enjoy it. We like I said, we had some good talent, and we meticulously went over the script, and we had 4 years to do it. So, you know, there was times that, you know, I didn't know which way, you know, it was going to go, but Debbie pulled it off. I mean, I got to give her credit. She worked her tail off, and she's a great person to start, and she's got a big heart, you know. And I tell her, Debbie, you're just too easy going, you know. Sometimes you need to really tighten up, but she'll give you the shirt off her back, and she got it done. So, you know, my hat's off to her.
Excellent. What now, since you know, with your encounters and experience, one of the questions in the chat room from Beth is, what are your thoughts on Justin Smeha's story? You know, and she mentions Dire story, but I'm curious too, as your thoughts on Justin Smeha. Have you contacted him at all, or?
No, I haven't talked to him, but I'm let down.
Oh yeah.
I'm really let down because the guy seemed believable, you know, and I really felt sorry for him the way the criticism was coming back on him. And you know, the guy did say, I'm sorry, but later on I heard that that was a bear.
He went back and he got a piece of fur or something like that. And
Melba
ended up being bear, yeah.
Melba Ketchum lives only about 30, 35 miles from me.
Okay.
Just through the woods. And I did some reading on that story. But after it was on TV and the internet that was a bear, and it kind of let me down. I think his credibility, he destroyed his credibility.
Possibly. I think they're still doing blood samples from his shoes. That Sykes is still hasn't come out with the final evaluation on that yet. So I still think that's open. You know, I haven't personally talked to Justin, but I've followed him for a while. So I'm still kind of optimistic on that yet. I haven't weighed in an opinion either for or against him yet. His story. You know, either.
You know, if it turns out to be a true story, I just hate he pulled the trigger on the creature. Because
yeah.
I'm sure, understand that it was a female, a big female that he shot and a baby. And I just, you know, the female, if he hit her pretty good, she's going to go off and die. And the baby's dead. So there's two creatures right there that lost their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I really hate that.
Well, yeah, especially since you say you've seen this creature up close and it looked more human than not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to pull the trigger on something like that, yeah, it kind of hits home. Mike, with the description of the face, I didn't ask you this earlier, but can you describe the nostril or nose on the face at all?
Right. He had a long bridge Sibylla, this sketch artist, this lady's name is Sibylla Irwin. She contacted me last night and asked me if I had done a sketch on the creature yet.
Okay.
And I said, no. And she said, would you like to do it? I said, well, yeah, fine, you know, sure. Well, anyway, last night I got on the internet and we worked together on different, I looked at different faces and I would tell her, hey, the jawbone's like this, the eyes are like this. So finally I give her something to go on and she come back today just before you call with a sketch of the creature and she hit dead on. I mean, the face was a little bit too black, you know. I told her, I said, you need to lighten the face up. And this is what the creature looked like. And when I get the final results, I'll be glad to share it with y'all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that'd be excellent. So, I mean, really, in your description of what you saw, in your opinion, Sasquatch seemed more human than ape.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
That is correct.
Okay. You know, and have you had any corroborating stories in your area of similar encounters or other people that have come forward and talked to you about...
Yes, sir. We've had some other stories. Not far from me is the Sabine River, and there was a hog hunter down there one day hunting this guy, and he'd put some apples out and all for some hogs to be feeding on, and he got down there early one morning, and he said just as daybreak was coming in, he seen a creature standing behind a tree. He didn't know what it was. It was tall, and it's black, hairy, and it was watching the hogs feed just like he was. And he said all of a sudden, this creature let out a Tarzan yell, a wild yell, and she said it jumped in the middle of these hogs. Well, it grabbed one of the hogs. You know, and a wild hog is a dangerous creature. They can hurt you real bad. Said she got on top of him and was hitting him with her fist in the head, and I'll explain to you how I know it's a female in a minute, hitting the hog in the head, and he said every time she hit him in the head, he could hear bones crack. And, you know, a hog's got a head like concrete. And when she killed the hog, she picked it up, put it over her shoulder, walked over to his deer stand, threw the hog down, looked up at him for about a minute, and he said it was a female because he could see her breast, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she picked the hog up, walked away from him, and left. And his buddy come running up about 5 minutes later. He said, what happened? He said, let's get in the boat and get out of here, and I'll tell you about it. So that was just a few miles from where I live.
Hmm. Well, there's definitely plenty of food for him with all those hog populations on the rise then, huh?
Yeah. We've got a bad hog situation down here. I mean, they're killing the land, they're destroying the land, they're killing the farmers' baby calves. They're running rampant.
Is there a lot of swamps by you too?
Oh yes, yes. I'm kind of more or less in northern Louisiana. To get really, really swampy, you would have to go probably 150 miles south of here to get down around Baton Rouge, New Orleans. That's really where the swamps are. But I also hear a lot of reports, you know, creatures down there.
Yeah, and those kind of areas aren't really developable, so I think they'll always remain Sasquatch habitat, and they're hard to penetrate. And
mm-hmm. You can't, like you said, you can't develop them. Well, I've had one of the big questions that I get asked is, why is there so many sightings now? This wasn't going on 10 years ago, 15 years ago. What's happened? Well, first off, all your cities are expanding. They're moving out. The suburbs are moving more out in the rural areas. The timber industry is cutting their habitat. Down here, we have oil and gas boom right now. They're coming into the woods. They're opening up gigantic spaces to drill those wells. The habitat is being destroyed. It's being It's been taken away like the way the white man did the Indians, you know, how they took their land years ago. It's the same thing going on with the Sasquatch.
Yeah. I know hunting has been down in recent years in Minnesota as far as the numbers people are bringing in, and you know, some of that has to do with urban sprawl and other factors as well. Populations are down in certain animals, so they're having to, you know, cut down on the amount of permits they issue and all sorts of stuff that DNR has to do to try and balance things out with, you know, all the things man's doing.
So, Mike, in your opinion, do you think, you know, are they there year-round in your area, or do they migrate or travel, or, I mean, is it something
that's,
that you can go out and find them?
That's a good question. I wouldn't know how to answer you on that. Mainly when the ones that I've saw has been in the cooler weather, you know, cold weather. I haven't really seen any in the summertime at all, not during any warm weather. It seems like they're not moving, so I don't know. I don't know what they do. You know, down here and where we're at, you know, even if they migrated to another state or two across from Louisiana, you're still going to have the heat. I mean, there's no way, you know, the land, the habitat's going to be the same because, you know, the South is the South. And it's flat. It's low land, swampy marshes. So do I think they migrate? No, I don't think they migrate. That's just my belief.
Yeah.
You know, I could be wrong, but that's just my belief.
Yeah, I think we would have discovered them by now if they're, you know, these 10-foot creatures were migrating from Minnesota to Louisiana, you know? I mean, they would have to be perfect. They wouldn't be able to, you know, people are like, well, they could follow power lines and train tracks
you know,
and things.
I heard one story now. I heard this story that they floated down the rivers on logs and come up north. You know, you hear all kind of stuff, but I was told, one guy told me one night over some beers, hey, you know how they got down here? I said, I'd like to know. And he said, well, they got on logs. And they got up the rivers, man. They floated down. And I said, well, you know how many, a couple more beers, and I guess they'll be, next time they'll be flown down. But
yeah.
You know, you hear it all, you know.
Yeah, I'm not in the, you know, I don't think they travel too far. I think, I mean, deer don't migrate real far. You know, they go from valley to mountain or you know, especially up here in Oregon,
right?
In the areas that I'm in, they, you know, I think Sasquatch is real similar to that.
I mean,
kind of.
There's a reason why we haven't discovered them. They go to the areas that are the hardest for us to go, where there's enough resources.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in order for them to go to a far distance away, they would have to expose themselves. They'd have to put themselves in the open. I mean, they would have to know where every food source and water hole is along the way of the migration. I mean, I think that's just, it's too much to,
you know, if this
isn't a 3-foot, 40-pound creature, you know.
You know, if your house is full of groceries and you've got everything you want, why leave?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it don't make sense.
Well, speaking of groceries, what exactly in Louisiana, beside deer and apparently turkey, is there to munch on? I mean, I can tell you what is up here in Oregon, but what about Louisiana?
Well, down here, I don't think we have the food substance that y'all have up there. We've got grapes, wild grapes, you know, muscadines, if you know what that is. We have wild grapes. We have apple trees, pear trees, fish in the creeks, you know, that they can catch. Mainly, I think one of the main food sources they like, they love wild hogs. And they catch them. They can catch a hog. Because I've had reports of people telling me that they saw one toting one over the shoulder. So the wild hogs and the deer, and that's mainly I think they do a lot of dumpster diving too. I've heard reports, they tearing bags out of dumpsters trying to, I guess, find leftover food that we left, you know.
You guys got any Home Depots down in your area?
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
I have a problem with the dumpster diving. It's another thing. I mean, there's cameras on buildings, there's people. I think we would have discovered this thing if all these claims are true about habituation and going in dumpsters. I mean, you know, once again, we're dealing with a massive creature here. It's
mm-hmm.
How does it avoid us if it's coming this close to man and interacting with us?
Well, the people that told me about the dumpsters, they have dumpsters out in rural areas, and where they put these dumpsters, there's no houses around for miles.
Oh,
they won't let them put a dumpster near a house. They make it. They put them out down dirt roads, and I mean these are out in the boondocks. I mean, people come from miles, and I've had people say, you know, I drove by and I saw somebody in a great big hairy suit. He was in a dumpster, you know, digging in it. You know,
What are these dumpsters for then, or
for people to take their garbage?
It's just kind of a rural community thing.
It's just a rural community dump, what it is.
Okay, gotcha.
I think
that's a little more sensible.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I think they, you know, sometimes just don't get noticed, or if there is anything on a security camera, no one says anything about it.
There's no cameras out there.
I think they're very
particularly, but what was that?
I think they're very opportunistic. You know, there's tons of stories of them eating roadkill and that sort of thing. So, you know, if there's a dumpster, you know, available with something, you know, that intrigues them, it's possible.
Yeah.
Easy pickings, you know.
I mean, why wouldn't they? Yeah, it is. It is easy.
Well, because
their
ultimate, I mean, I think their whole almost goal in life is to avoid us. You know, they know where the be all end all.
I'm sure they take chances. You know, I mean, they get seen. They do get seen. You know, by people.
They do, but you know, you'd think you'd have some video.
They're highly intelligent.
They are, yeah.
You know, I got to give that to them. They're highly intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, do you think they can swim?
To make it this long without somebody producing a body, you know, for all these years and a body hadn't been produced, you know, in order to survive that, you've got to be a very intelligent creature.
Mm-hmm. The forest is their home.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to live there.
They sure do. They do.
You know,
they know how to avoid us, and they know how to live there.
If, let's say, they are human, you know, they could very well fear our diseases and sicknesses as well. And, you know, they know we bait and trap other animals. So I think they'd be wary of some, you know, us maybe sticking food out or those type of things. I mean, I hear these kind of claims, you know, all the time, but I never really see any evidence or proof of anything.
Mike, do you think they have the capability of swimming? I have so many, you know, reports of them being in the water, and I can't say here or there if they can swim or not, but I love hearing other people's ideas if they can swim.
Well, I would think they could swim because I've saw monkeys before. On TV in the water swimming, and I think they could swim. I don't see why they couldn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't see why they couldn't either. I don't know if
all your other animals, your deer, anything can swim.
Right.
You know, so I would feel sure that, yeah, they could swim. That's my you know.
Yeah, I think they have to up here in Minnesota. It's a
land
of 10,000 lakes.
10,000 lakes or something up in Minnesota.
Yeah.
They ain't got no choice, man. I mean, it's either going to swim or drown, you know. All those lakes up there. I just wish I lived up there. I'd go fishing every day.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's perfect. And some of those boggy areas are just impenetrable. And it's good. You know, there's not as many sightings as you'd think in other states for how woodsy and rural it is.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at some areas and it kind of has to do with population, too. I mean, the majority of the people are around the Minneapolis-St. Paul area.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're going to have less sightings because not that many people live in those
mm-hmm.
really rural coniferous zones.
Right.
Hey,
like
Mike,
Ohio,
you...
people are like, Ohio has so many sightings, you know, it's number four. Well, it's also like the sixth most populated state, so
mm-hmm.
yeah, I think that has a little hand in it. You got more people, you're going to have more sightings.
Well, up there, you know, I had a friend that lived up there, and he worked with me down here in Louisiana, transferred down with the company. And he was telling me about all the farming that went on in Ohio. And your deer up there are so much bigger and fatter. You know, you got 300-pound deer up there. Down here, if you kill a 150-pound deer, you kill a moose. you know, and up, you know, it's more good, better food source up in Ohio for the creatures to eat. You know, the deer are bigger and fatter. Your hogs are going to be bigger and fatter. There's corn there. You know, all the corn that they plant.
True. And
I
it gets
just,
cold, but
there's...
it doesn't get Minnesota cold.
Right. So I think it's a real good food source in Ohio for them.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike,
that's why
I
don't think they migrate either, because they find footprints, you know, on the Canadian border. And I think they have a big area that they roam, and if they have to move, they'll move. But
mm-hmm.
migrating's a stretch.
Right. Now, I think.
Oh yeah.
I think the big boys are up in the North Pacific Northwest and up in Canada. They're really, really big. You know what I hear about? You know, they really the ones are bigger up there for some reason. I don't know why, but that's just what I've read.
Maybe it's they need the mass because of the, you know, the conditions that they're living in. If you look at the, you know, the size and mass of the ones in, you know, the Northwest as opposed to the ones in Florida,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, down here, see, we're walking flatland.
Mm-hmm.
Up there, you're walking mountains. When you're
exactly.
walking up mountains, you're developing, you know, your legs
mm-hmm.
and your body structure. You know, your runners and your Olympians and all that. A lot of them train in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You need that mass.
Where they can
run
up.
Yeah, you need the mass to be able to, you know, walk this terrain, live in this climate, live in the snow, hunt, whatever, because the animals... like you said, are probably bigger as well. So to take down
yeah, exactly.
a deer that size, you're going to have
See,
to be a big boy.
Bigger
you know?
Predators.
Exactly.
Grizzly
as opposed
bears,
to,
Kodiak.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to the skunk ape in Florida where, you know, they're not as hairy, they're not as beefy, they're kind of, you know, I know I'm going to insult people, but they're probably a little more scrawny because they don't need that. You know, they don't need to.
A lot hotter down here, too.
Yeah, it's hotter, so the hair, you know, it's just, it's a bunch of different reasons why. I mean, I live in New England, you know, so ours aren't as big as the ones, you know,
well,
in
also,
the Northwest. But,
up
I mean,
in the Pacific Northwest and Canada, you have more game than we have down
mm-hmm.
here. We don't
mm-hmm.
have antelope. We don't have... the moose. We don't have the elk.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more
yeah.
food up there.
Yeah.
There's loads of food up here.
Yeah.
And that's why
I
live
like
in Oregon.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, it's bigger game. So you have to, you can't take, you know, you can't expect a skunk ape to take down a, you know, a moose or
yeah.
Maybe a skunk.
Or a caribou.
Yeah, I forgot about caribou, too, see?
Yeah.
That's another creature I forgot.
I mean, the thing would look at him and laugh, you know? I mean, this, it's survival. It's survival.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
they have to be beefier.
Yeah,
they have to be
selection.
Bigger. They have to stay warmer. You know, when you're heavier, you produce more heat. And when you're in that kind of, you know, environment, you have to stay, you know, warm. Otherwise, you don't make it.
Right.
So they find
Mike.
Ways, you know, they find ways.
Mike, I got a question for you. You described earlier, you know, we talked about your initial encounter, but you also described another possible Sasquatch or something along those lines, you know, that was, I think, a little bit smaller. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, the three-toed?
Yeah. Like, kind of like the folk monster sort of thing.
Right.
You know,
right.
Do you think they're related, or is that something completely different?
Well, if you put the two creatures together, they're totally different. If you're looking at them standing there side by side, this three-toed creature has a scraggly, knotted up mass monkey face creature. Nothing like the one that chased me off my deer stand. I don't know if it's what the relationship is. I'm sure that there's kin, you know, because both of them are bipedal. They're tall, and they're hairy. So somehow, you know, along the lines, I feel like they're kin.
Yeah, I find that fascinating because, you know, there's a lot of encounters out there, and they kind of change from story to story. The second one you're describing sounds smaller and dirtier and less human than your original encounter.
That's correct.
So,
that's correct.
Yeah.
The weight is a lot less weight, too.
You think that's maybe like a skunk ape then, or?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I would consider that a skunk ape.
Dang, Johnny.
Okay, yeah. Because those extend outside of Florida, right? Maybe South Georgia,
right.
Parts of Louisiana.
Right.
Kind of those swampier areas.
We're not, from Florida as a crow flies, we're probably 700-800 miles.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that wouldn't be hard for them to, you know, have gotten over here.
So are you actively researching, Mike?
Yes, sir.
Are you yeah.
Yes,
so
sir.
You're going out. I mean, what is your schedule like? I mean,
I have a friend who is a really great researcher. His name is Jim Lansdale. Here, he lives not far from me, and true great researcher. I mean, great guy. But me and him, we go out. We try to go out once or twice a week, and we work a lot of encounters that people have that calls us, and we're working over in this other area where I told you about these three-toed creatures were. We're working that area. We'll start working heavier now that it's cooling off. The heat has kind of set us back, and once the cold weather, another 6 weeks here, around the 1st of October, we'll start hitting it pretty heavy.
Excellent. I mean, you sound like a big proponent for the cold weather, whereas up here in Oregon, I find most encounters happen with a little bit warmer weather during the summer months, you know.
Well, y'all's weather's a lot harder up there, you know, than
we
have.
Yeah, and we don't have the humidity either.
Right, the humidity's horrible down here. It's really terrible.
It's horrible here, too, in the summer.
Mm-hmm. It's bad today down here.
It's bad here, too. We're heat index, we're at about 100.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people don't realize it gets hot here in Minnesota in the summer, in the southern half of the state.
Mm-hmm.
We got the three biomes, though. We got the prairie, the deciduous zone, and the coniferous zone. And the coniferous zone is where the Bigfoots are and where it's a cooler climate.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hot one today.
Right, it sure is. We got a little wind blowing, though.
And I lived in Florida for a while, so I know hot, too.
Mm-hmm. You sure do.
The angle of the sun's different down there, though. You know, it could
right.
be the same temperature down there, same humidity, but it's going to feel hotter down there
right.
than it would up here.
Right, it's blaring down on you.
So do you have a lot of people contacting with encounters? I mean,
it seems like everywhere I go, and I just casually start talking to somebody, and I'll say, well, you know, I got a friend over here, such and so, and he had a counter out while deer hunting, or another guy I know, something's come up behind his house. Just through word of mouth, and then a lot of those people will find out about me, and they'll call me and say, you know, we've had an encounter, or I saw this. I'll pick it up. I'll pick the lead up from there.
Do you guys actually go out and track cast or do anything like that? Do you have any cast in your?
I have some cast, but we do go out, and the place that we working over where I told you where those three-toed creatures were.
Yeah.
We have a surveillance system. Jim has a surveillance system in the house, cameras around the house. They were so slick that they started skirting our cameras. You know, they were coming up, scratching on the windows of this lady's house. They were pulling on the doors, beating on the walls, tormenting them all they could. So we took the camera system out of one house and moved it over to the next door's house, and one of the lady's husbands built some big bird houses. And what we did, we put the cameras in the bird houses, trying to, you know, to try to get a notch on the creature, you know, to try to keep them from spotting. And that's helped. I think it's picked up some of the creatures, you know. But they would see those cameras that was hanging on the eaves of the houses, you know, and they would skirt them. And so we put them in some bird houses, and that seems to be working fairly well, I understand. I haven't been seen anything yet, but I am about a week. I'm going over there.
So do you use like trail cameras? I mean, do you think that that's something that's valuable with the research, or is that something that you steer away from?
Now, what was the question again?
With trail cameras, is that something
We've used them, but, you know, I'll be honest with you, we haven't done no good. There's just, Jim said that there's some kind of glare that those cameras put off. He paints all his cameras black, some kind of ultraviolet glare that comes off the camera that they can see, and he paints all his cameras black, but he's done better with the surveillance system in the bird houses and on the eaves of the house than any other system.
Mm-hmm. With your story, you know, I hear so many stories and reports, and people have a lot of questions with this, is that when you go into an area that Sasquatch is possibly in, they kind of know that you're there beforehand. And, for you to be kind of, a sneak upon them, it's kind of impossible. So with your tree stand encounter, you know, do you think they knew you were there, or that you totally surprised them?
I think I totally surprised him, because that day there was no wind, so my scent was not picked up, and I was about 12 foot up in that deer stand above the ground, and I think he was just in hot pursuit of that little doe, and he was chasing her, and when she laid down in front of my stand, he stopped and he looked up and he saw me. I think I totally surprised him. I don't think he had any idea that I was there.
Do you think there was more than one or two Sasquatches in the area? Could there have been?
I don't know. I saw two. I saw two, but you know, that's all I can legally say is I saw two.
Uh huh. Well, that's what I find most interesting is that with some of the reports that I've taken in and listened to, that they're with deer being present and Sasquatch being aggressive, there's at least two. Sometimes there's more.
Mm.
So it's always interesting for me to hear these sort of stories because I actually think there's probably more than two in the area unless there's some sort of rogue males. I mean, what do you think about rogue males being out in your area? Do you think that's possible?
Well, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You've got rogue males just about every kind of creature, but that day, that was a hunting party, and I broke the hunting party up. I mean, he had that doe. He had her. I mean, if I wouldn't have been there, she probably would have got her within 50 to 100 feet. I mean, that deer was whooped down. I've never seen a deer that was just wringing wet, soaked with, she had foam coming out of her mouth, her nostrils. She was very, very hot. And this was 30 degree weather.
Wow. Yeah. So she'd been running for her life.
She was been running for a while. They had been, I think that's the reason he got so mad, is they'd been running that deer for quite a while, and I blew the dinner. I was the party pooper.
Scary encounter.
No, it's a. I mean, I love the encounter story and whatnot. I love anything to do with hunting encounters. I find some of those to be the most credible ones and whatnot. Do you think that they? I mean, how do you think they? I guess kill their prey. There's stories of them using rocks or sticks or, how do you think they destroy their prey or kill them? Sorry.
Well, I saw a deal, I think on Mysterious Encounters or something that time with Autumn Williams, where several of them will encompass a deer and they will circle it and they tighten the circle up. And then one of them jumps the deer from behind and grabs it behind the back legs, and then the other one pounces on, they break the neck. I think what these creatures was doing that day that I run into, I think they were just physically going to run the deer out of breath, till it conked out. I mean, I could have jumped down off my stand and picked that deer up right then and toted that deer out. That's how whipped down she was. She was just so tired. It was a little young deer, a little 50-pound deer on top of that, really a baby. But they
might have saved its life that day.
They had that deer. I mean, the deal was about 90% done with them, and the deal would have been closed.
That's got to be a barbaric sight to watch a couple of Bigfoots eat.
I'm sure it would be.
Well, there's lots of stories of them just not so much stories, but people coming upon deer carcasses that nothing's missing but like the kidneys and a few broken bones. Do you think
liver.
Mike, that they or the liver, sorry, yeah. That they Mike, do you think that they eat the whole body or just go for the nutrients of, like, say, the liver?
Well, I feel like they eat the whole body. It depends on how many of them. When they kill the animal, the deer, and they bring it back to where they're at, their house is. I think it depends on the number of Bigfoots that's going to be eating on the deer. I think if it's maybe one, he might eat the liver and, the guts and stuff like that, But I feel like if it's several, they're going to eat the whole deer.
Yeah. Well, they might eat the liver first and then come back later for other parts of it or whatever, get that initial nutrient burst out of the way.
Right. They kind of, they don't eat it all. They'll eat it later,
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess hunters are the ones that you'd think would be seeing these creatures almost the most. They're the ones that are out in the woods, quiet.
Well, my feelings on that, I feel like they are seeing creatures, but I feel like everybody's not saying nothing because they're afraid of ridicule, criticism. Like I was, you know, I went 20 years before I even opened my mouth about it, and I quit hunting. I just couldn't hunt no more because I tried. I couldn't go in. I went in at 8, 9 o'clock in the morning because I was afraid to go in dark in the morning time. I would get out of the woods at 4 o'clock in the evening because I was afraid didn't want the dark to catch me. And I would be on my stand sitting there, but I'm looking behind trees. I'm looking at trees because the creatures like to jump. They like to jump to a tree and hug that tree and kind of blend in with the tree and try to throw you off. And, you know, I was more Bigfoot hunting then than I was deer hunting, so I just quit. I just said the heck with it.
So yes. When's the last time you actually went out hunting?
Probably 1991.
Wow. And your original encounter was in 1981, so wow.
Right. And like I said, between 81 and 91, there were several years I didn't hunt. Matter of fact, I mean, it was probably 7-8 years in that decade that I didn't hunt. And, you know, I would get back in a hunting club with friends, but I really couldn't get into hunting no more. I mean, my spirit was broke, and I just didn't enjoy it. I was too busy looking for Bigfoot.
Yeah, I mean,
well, it seems like Bigfoot changed your life.
Apparently.
Very much. Very much.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I've had my encounter and whatnot, and I still hunt. Not that it hasn't changed me, because now I'm more into the research thing and not so much hunting. If I hunt, I usually go to areas where I'm pretty sure Bigfoot's not going to be around. Not that he's not, but I mean... I don't when I had my encounter, I never really had a problem telling too many. I told my family, I told close friends, but I didn't blast it. And you know, like you said, it took you how many years to come
20.
Out with your encounter?
20.
20 years, yeah. And that's not unheard of. A lot of people are in the same boat as you. They don't come out and say anything. Some of the best encounters that I've heard of. Or seen in my research, I have gone onto hunting blogs and looked up Bigfoot, the subject, and people say, hey, you know, I saw this or I heard this or I found this, and they get ridiculed and belittled into oblivion, and then they shut up. Yeah.
I tried one time a hunting buddy, I tried to tell him about it, you know, and the first words out of his mouth was, oh, come on, Mike, what are you fixing to tell me? You went out in the woods hunting and you saw a booger. Did a big, bad boogeyman get after you? Well, I just shut up, you know.
Yeah.
So that was the end of that. I just said to hell with it.
Yeah. No, and I hear that from so many people, you know, whether you're a hunter or just out camping, you know, everybody goes, oh, why aren't you sharing your story, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, because you're going to get ridiculed. You are going to get ridiculed, and people are going to question you upon what you saw, or they'll come at you with, you know, you saw a bear or, you know, a moose ass or whatever, you know. So I give a lot of kudos to those people, especially hunters in certain circumstances, that actually, you know, come out and talk about it. And, you know, those are the most fascinating stories to me because they're hunters. They don't really want the notoriety of saying they saw something, you know, especially after so many years of hunting and then all of a sudden they get this experience or encounter. You know, I mean, you probably were hunting many, many years and never had anything happen and all of a sudden, wham,
correct.
Right?
That's
yeah.
correct. There's been years that I hunted that before this happened, I heard the shrill whistle before. I heard footprints. I heard bipedal footprints. I would take two or three steps. It would take two or three steps. And I would get down on the ground. I would look to see what was bothering me, and I couldn't see nothing. I would get down on the ground. I would lay down flat on my belly and look at the bottom of the trees, trying to see if I could see legs, you know. And I couldn't. I didn't see nothing. And so, you know, I've had stuff thrown at me, and I thought, well, maybe that was a bird or something dropping an acorn or a squirrel or something, you know. I really didn't. I didn't pay no attention to it because I didn't believe in Bigfoot, you know. You know, I'd heard the stories that happened out in California, but that's
right.
2,000 miles from here. So, you know, I had no idea that these things were here.
Yeah. One of our guests in the chat room, Flycatch, is asking a question if you have identified any hotspots in the state of Louisiana.
Well, I wouldn't know if I would call it a hot spot, but yes, I do have a couple spots where there is current activity, and it's year-round activity.
Year-round. So that would kind of kill the whole migrating theory if it's year-round.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, but like I said, we do see more in cooler weather than we do in hot weather.
Gotcha.
But mainly in hot weather, we find tracks and broken brush and stuff like that. I mean, really no visuals, but it seems like in the cooler weather, you know, the fall and the winter, in the springtime, the early springtime, is when we see, you know, creatures.
All right, well, we have a question in the chat room that somebody asked, and the men are saying don't ask. But do you believe they can cloak?
Do I believe they can croak?
No, cloak. You know, basically go invincible or, you know, invisible.
Well, what I've seen them do in the woods from my deer stand, I seen one day walking through the woods, and there was a hunter coming down a fire lane, and he hugged a tree.
Mm-hmm.
And if I would not have seen him hug that tree that close, I could not have never known that it was a Bigfoot that actually hugged that tree. He blended in so good that he actually looked like part of the tree. I don't know the answer to that question. I'll tell you
that the cloaking thing is kind of a joke to me. I think it's a joke to me. I mean, it was a question posed, and I think you answered it pretty good. I don't think they can cloak. I think that they're masters of
disguise.
Divorce. Disguise. That's their home. And, you know, that they can, you know, avoid humans very easily in the forest because that's what they do. I mean, they hunt deer and such. They're going to be, you know, non-seen and very elusive.
Well, you know, a dog's nose, I don't forget how many times greater smell than we have. All creatures, animals, have greater vision and better smell than we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like it's the same way with a Sasquatch. He can smell us, you know, at greater distances and see us, you know. And that gives him time to disguise or get out of there, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And his hearing and hearability too, you know. So he's got a very big edge on us.
Well, right, and like you said earlier, you know, with your encounter with your moss cover up and whatnot, you were pretty well hidden, and you had people come upon you with dogs even and not see you.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And that to me, that's just you know, a good example of camouflage. You know, getting out in the field. You know, I've been a hunter a long time and whatnot, and there's ways to go about hiding yourself in scent. That almost nothing can find you, so or see you, or smell you. So for example.
Well, you know, the thing that I went by, if I can see your deer stand, and I can see you on that deer stand, so can a deer.
Absolutely.
And I got up in the trees. Man, I made my stand way up in the trees. And I hid. I put nails in a tree to climb up, you know. And I made sure that, you know, I wanted where a hunter could walk under there and he couldn't see me. Of course, I've had a few guys walk under my stand and relieve themselves, you know, and it was pretty hard for me not to pull the trigger. You know, it kind of PO'd me, you know.
Uh-huh.
I said, I guess I'm doing too good a job, you know.
Oh, apparently.
Was this public land then, or?
It was public land. It was Timber Company owned land, like Willamette, Boise Southern, people like that. And but since then, they started leasing their land to hunting clubs. And these hunting clubs get like 20, 25 members, and they pay X amount of dollars per acre to lease the property. And then they put their signs up, and they go in there, and they can hunt. Nobody else can come in there, you know, and hunt. But that happened. That started happening around 1991 is when the land started becoming leased up, and there just wasn't no land left to hunt. The property where I had my encounter is a hunting club now.
Okay.
Hmm. You think the Bigfoots have moved out of there?
Yeah.
Well, really, you know, the woods is the woods. I doubt it. I seriously doubt it, because that was some really deep, deep woods.
Are they just dodging bullets?
Just dodging bullets.
I mean, so since your encounter, I mean, your original encounter, or the encounter that inspired the Skookum movie, what have you seen since? You know, what's your latest encounter or story that you can share?
Well, I really haven't had, since the movie, I've been working on the movie just about every day. Last week, matter of fact, we had a couple people come down from Boston, and I had a cameraman and a makeup lady, and we did some stuff, some more tweaking on the movie. He brought a drone down, and it's a little ship of a deal with four propellers on it, and had a camera on it, and we did a bunch of aerial photos from up above the tree.
Yeah,
and that really is going to give the movie some good real footage, you know, from the air. We went down to some lakes and flew over some lakes, flew over where we shot the movie. A guy's name is Shane Dizek, and he come down, and he worked with me in the movie also. He's a movie star, and we really did a lot of good shooting. But we've got investigation that we've got to go work where this guy was up near the river, and he went fishing, and he was walking on the levee, coming back down the levee, and he heard something over, you know, to the left of him, and he looked, and it was a creature that was walking with him, followed him. So he took off running, and he lived not far from there, and he run home, you know, and we're supposed to meet with him and go back and check that out.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, it kind of sounds like the Falcon project on a smaller scale.
yeah, a lot cheaper, too.
A lot cheaper. I mean, you haven't talked to William Barnes, have you, or have you met William Barnes?
No, I hadn't talked to him, but I talked to Jeff about the project. I know it's several hundred thousand dollars.
Yeah, do you support that project?
Yeah, the honest feelings... things that I think about, what is he going to do with the downdraft in the mountains?
Yeah, no, I have the same questions. I know a lot of the research is going to be up here in the Pacific Northwest. We have the same situations with the downdraft and updrafts. I think that's kind of hindsight in a way. It's just getting off the ground, you know, no pun intended, just getting it funded.
I think he's well on his way to Wade Talk.
Oh, I think
I don't know where he's at, but I think he was on his way.
Oh, he's on his way, and I do think it will happen. I really do, and I support it 100%.
I do, too.
Yeah, you know, glad to hear that. You know, and like William had mentioned before, we've had him on the show. They will be traveling the country, and not just the Pacific Northwest, but throughout the country, and, you know, depending on the areas that they're in, you know, they will have a ground crew as well that can go out after the fact and do some research on the ground.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, having Dr. Beldrum there, I mean, he's he knows his stuff. I got to give my hats off to the guy. He's very intelligent.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
Mike, what have you got planned for the future? What are your goals? I mean, is this something that, you know, with the film coming out, all that, are you going to continue on researching or?
Yes. I want to get a little bit bigger. I want to get some better equipment. You know, I want to get a flare. My friend Jim has a flare, and we've used that and you know, spotted creatures. It's really a tool. It amazes me because, you know, we've been out in cold weather, and it picked up the heat in the pine trees. The trees, you could actually see the heat in the trees.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
no, I have a...
Fantastic.
Access to a FLIR, and I know exactly what you're talking about.
I mean, I'm wanting to get me some better equipment, you know, after the movie's out and, you know, some money's
Don't we
made.
All?
Yeah.
I want to kind of invest it back in Bigfoot, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, like we talked earlier on the phone, you know, you want to, you're not close shop, you know, you want to, you know, tell people about Bigfoot and your experience and share and learn more, and I really appreciate that. FLIR is a good way to go, you know, but that FLIR that you're using, does it record?
No, sir. It wasn't a recorder. It didn't record. It was one of the older models. It was kind of a big model, you know, handheld, kind of big.
Well, if they record, they're usually rather expensive.
Right. They're up there in the grands.
Yeah. So, I mean, are you going to do you have a group now that you're involved with, or just... you going out by yourself?
No, I go out with a friend, Jim. Jim Lansdale. He's in with the not the East Coast, but the Southern Coast Bigfoot Research Organization. He's in with them. And
has he had an encounter, or he just
involved? He's had a lot of encounters. He has a piece of property. Family-owned property around 1,500 acres, I think, below me, about 4 miles, and he has a bunch of creatures on his property, and they were tearing down his deer feeders, getting the corn out of it. He did a show with Chester Moore and Ken Gerhard back in 2005 called Legend Hunters.
I'm familiar with that.
I don't know if you ever saw
it.
Come on the Travel Channel, Legend Hunters.
Yep. No, I'm familiar with that.
Well, he was in the show, and
okay.
He is my partner.
So, what kind of things do you guys have? Do you guys have anything organized, or are you guys still planning stuff?
Well, we're just mainly kind of flying solo right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just taking it one day at a time.
Yeah. I mean,
we're small time, if you will.
Everybody is.
Are you on Facebook?
Yes.
Okay, you should send him our group invitation, Shane.
Oh, absolutely, I will. I'll get him in Monster X and get him involved with us, because I'd love to hear some feedback and what you guys got going on.
Before we get off, you give me your cell number, and I'll fire you those pictures of juveniles up.
Yeah, I'll send those to you in a PM. I don't want to blast my phone number over.
Yeah, just send it to me over, kind of, you know.
Nonchalant.
Well, there you go. You got it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we're down to our last 30 seconds here. So,
hey, Mike Woolley, really appreciate you coming on with us last minute and sharing your encounter and and your history with Sasquatch. You really did us a favor today, and really appreciate it, and respect you for that, and love hearing back from you on future.
Be glad to. Anytime you have any questions, you have my number, feel free to contact me either way, Facebook or by my phone. I'll be more than happy to talk to you guys again, and I've enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Sounds good. Thanks. And thanks, everyone, for joining us in the chat room if we're still on here.